Halashing for halas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Hi, and welcome to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, coming to you live on 101.9 megahertz of cooking power. So, what's on the menu today? Well, we have a lovely, quick and easy chicken wing dish, which was a real hit this week. So you can either make that as a starter, perhaps, or as a full meal. Depends on how much you love chicken wings. Then I have a very special guest on the show today by the name of Emma Spitzer from the UK. Now, who's Emma Spitzer, you're saying? Well, after cooking since the age of 8 and becoming a MasterChef finalist, Emma Spitzer's first book merges the best of Middle Eastern with Eastern Europe, which incorporates her Polish and Russian heritage. And it seems like that it's a lot for most of us. There's Sephardic, Ashkenazic, we're a real mixed bunch. Anyway, her book is entitled Fress, which is a Yiddish word, as they put on the cover, to eat copiously, without restraint. Okay, well, I love fressing. It reflects her style of using plenty of ingredients. Her ethos is to get as much flavor as possible from a simple and unfussy recipe that won't require hours in the kitchen. Many of the recipes are from her mother, which have carried with them a strong Jewish identity, as well as being inspired by her own travels of Israel, Egypt, Jordan, and North Africa. And I must say, she's a travel agent as well. I mean, how incredible is that? Imagine being able to go all over the world just trying all this wonderful food. But I do love her attitude to food. Okay, so she says she never adapts her dishes for younger palates. As far as she's concerned, kids' food just means a smaller portion. I mean, and I agree with that. I've always said I've given my kids spicy food from day one, and hence they have acquired a wonderful taste of all spicy and interesting food. She also says she's a generous cook with dishes made to share and rip into at the table. Love that. She's a real heathen though when it comes to stock, as she loves the powdered variety. Although she does admit fresh stock does have its place, and I'm sure most chefs use the powdered variety. It's just a lot easier and quicker. Not the Michelin, of course, but anyway, and she's somewhat of a spice junkie, and her food is designed to be relatively uncomplicated and easy to cook. No fancy artillery is required other than some simple tools to make the process more pleasurable. So, after the break, we'll chat to Emma Spitzer about life before, during, and after MasterChef's UK.
You're listening to the Essen Fressen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the show. And as mentioned before the break, my special guest is Emma Spitzer from the UK, who'll be chatting to us about her MasterChef's UK before, during, and after. And we'll be sharing a couple of recipes from her new book, Fress, which, as you all know in Yiddish, means to eat copious amounts of food without restraint. Okay, today my guest is a real foodie from Brighton in the UK, Emma Spritzer. I have to tell you, Emma, I have changed your name to Emma Sprinter because you just don't stop.
Oh, okay.
There's no rest for you. You've 4 young daughters, a travel agency, cookery classes, pop-up restaurants, you host supper clubs, you cater for functions, you're a finalist in the British MasterChef's competition, and you recently wrote your first cookery book called Fress. I'm out of breath already, so yeah. I don't know how you do it. Welcome to the show, Emma. Welcome to the show. It's thank wonderful to be chatting to you. Okay, so I think let's start off with going through your timeline. So how does a young, well-established travel agent from Brighton wake up one day and say, I'm going to enter the next British MasterChefs? Was it just a creative passion, your creative passion for cooking, your culinary background? Tell us all about it.
Okay, well, I've always been into food, and it was just a passion. It was no more than that. I never had really I had a desire, I guess, at one point to maybe go off and study it, but, you know, it was never really a burning desire to go off and be a chef. I just always had an interest in food. I love traveling, so I was very fortunate to have eaten lots of food around the world. And I was a big fan of MasterChef when it started in the 90s, here in the UK. And, I think I just got to a stage, my youngest daughter was one, and I watched the show avidly and I'd sit and talk to the TV and say, what are they doing? I could do that better, you know, for God's sake. And I just think, yeah, I got to the stage where my husband was like, oh, for crying out loud, just enter the show then. it was almost, it was a flippant remark, but I don't think he quite imagined that I'd take it seriously.
Yes.
So, I did take it seriously, and lo and behold, I got on the show.
So what happened? Did you just, you auditioned, and the next thing you were the top, how many people were on the show?
It's quite a long process, and you apply online, and then they're obviously sifting through many applications. It took a while. I think it's about 2 months from sending the application off to them, calling me from the studio and saying, let's have a chat. And then even at that point, they're just interviewing you on the phone.
Yes.
And it's quite a long interview. I remember it being just over an hour and feeling quite exhausted at the end of it. And them saying, well, if we kind of take you through to the next stage, then you'll come in and you'll audition. And the audition's obviously filmed, but never shown. And I'd gone off on holiday for a couple of weeks, thought no more of it because I didn't hear, but of course they'd left a message on my answer machine, pretty much the day after I'd arrived on my holiday, so the 2 weeks the message was sat there, I'm listened to, and saying, you know, come in for an audition ASAP. So I was actually one of the last people they took on the show because I kind of missed the main audition stage, so I was fortunate enough just to catch it. When I got back. And then, again, it's still quite long-winded. You go in, you audition, you cook, they chat to you, then they have to go and do all the background checks on you. And
what did you make?
It was such a long time before I had.
What did you...
I did a kind of a preserved lemon chicken dish, which is similar to one I did on the show, and one that's in press, actually. Nice. And I did it with majadra, which is the rice with the lentils and onions, and I did an Arabic salad to go with it, and tahini, and, you know, I took all sorts in, but clearly I was demonstrating that the influence of my cooking and food was a Middle Eastern flair.
Yes.
And I guess that, you know, when you have that sort of niche of cooking,
yes,
then, you know, you stand out a bit more, maybe.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
So as mentioned before, I'm chatting to Emma Spitzer from the UK, and I just wanted to share that beautiful recipe that got her into the finals with you. So it's called Bara Chicken, and it's actually a lovely dish. Now normally Emma cooks very simply and with maximum flavor, but this recipe, although it seems a little patskadic, believe me, once you've got everything organized and you've done your lemons, you've got your preserved lemons sorted out, this is the most wonderful dish. And I think it's time that we shared a special recipe that you can go to town on. Okay, so she says, during MasterChef, we were set a brief of choosing someone that inspired us and creating a dish around that person. It was a no-brainer for me. I had to do something with roast chicken inspired by my mum. But it had to be elevated from the classic bird I knew and loved into a MasterChef-worthy creation. This recipe incorporates all my favorite spices. With an hour to cook this dish, I spatchcocked a poisson to allow it to cook faster. But to eliminate the need for any butchery here, I've recreated the recipe using thighs, although it would work with any part of the chicken, or of course the entire bird. Not only is it very easy to make, it is ridiculously tasty and fit for either a simple family supper or as part of a more elaborate banquet. Okay, so now, the first thing that we have to discuss with this recipe is preserved lemons. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever made preserved lemons, but you can actually use them for many things. You can use the preserved lemon juice in salad dressings, in sauces, in anything that needs something a little acidic. And what you have to do, it's quite simple to make, and it's actually wonderful to have in your cupboard or in the fridge. You can put it in the fridge after about a week. But let me, I use Tori Avey's recipe, and I'm going to read you hers because it actually worked quite well for me. So what she uses 6 to 8 whole lemons and about 4 to 5 tablespoons of salt. Okay, you'll need a jar. I'd say about a liter and a half. Depends, of course, on the size of your lemons. I mean, small lemons, medium and big. So you'll see what fits into your jar. A sharp knife. And I used a wooden spoon. And you start by cleaning, first of all, clean your lemons well, the rinds of your lemon, and then you clean your jar very well in hot soapy water, and pat the lemons dry. And you can do it two ways. You can slice the ends from the off the lemons to create a flat top and bottom, or you can cut it into quarters. Okay, so you stand the lemon on one of the flat ends to preserve the lemons whole, and you cut an X in the lemon and stop when you're about 2 centimeters from cutting all the way through. The quarters of the lemon should actually remain attached at the base. Open the lemon and pour in 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Don't worry if some of the salt spills out. It's not a problem. Once you salt the lemons, pack them into the jar as tightly as possible. You can use a wooden spoon to push them down. If your masher is small enough to go into the top of the jar, you can use that. But once all the lemons are in the jar, just add an additional tablespoon of salt and press all the lemons down, okay? Because you want to extract as much juice as you can. And if the lemons are submerged in juice, you can secure the lid. If not, you may need to add some additional lemon juice. Fresh lemon juice. Please don't use water or bottled lemon juice. Must be fresh. Okay, so or alternatively, after slicing off the ends from the lemons, you can simply quarter them into 4 separate pieces. The quarters do not need to remain attached to the base. That's how I do it. I just cut them into quarters, salt them, and put them into the jar, press them, and there you've got beautiful preserved lemons. And after a week, you can put them into your fridge. They should be actually quite nice and translucent. Okay, so that's it. That's how to make preserved lemons. And we have to go to a break, and then I'm going to come back to you and tell you all about Bharat chicken.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show. Thank you for joining me. If you want to WhatsApp, you can do so on 061-895-1019 or just SMS us on 34519. And I'm here to answer any questions you may have, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you. So welcome back to the show. And we were talking about Emma Spitzer, the MasterChef's finalist. And a lady has just written a new book. And we're talking about the Bharat chicken that she used to get her place into MasterChef. So I told you how to, just before the break, that we needed to do preserved lemons and how to do them. It's simple. It's just lemons and salt and just mash them in your bell jar or a glass dish and cover them tightly, and after a week set them in the fridge. Okay, so for the recipe now, you need 12 bone-in, skin-on chicken thighs, 2 really large red onions, thinly sliced, because it's the onions that are actually going to give it that wonderful taste that you want to spoon on afterwards as well. 2 tablespoons of Bharat spice, which is available from Woolies. Now, Bharat spice is something that some people say it's meant to have 7 spices in it, but if you're like me, you add a little bit of this, maybe a little bit of chili. But it's basically a paprika, cumin, allspice, coriander type of mix. But it's just so much easier. Instead of buying all those spices, just to get by the Bharat spice at Woolworths. Then you'll also need 2 teaspoons of ground sumac, 1 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1 teaspoon of ground coriander, and here come your 4 preserved lemons, halved, and the flesh scooped out and discarded. 3 garlic cloves crushed. 400 mils of chicken stock using, she uses 1 tablespoon of chicken stock powder and the rest water. 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 teaspoon salt, a few twists of black pepper and rice or couscous to serve it on. So, add the chicken thighs to a sturdy, large, resealable plastic food bag. Okay, that would probably be like our Ziplocs, with all the ingredients. Then you seal it well before massaging the bag to mix everything together. So you're going to need quite a large plastic bag. And then you leave it to marinate in the fridge for a minimum of 2 hours, but preferably overnight. So all those wonderful spices and herbs can go into the chicken. You preheat the oven to about 200 degrees, just a bit above 180. And you add the chicken and all the remaining contents of the bag to a baking tray. And you roast it for about 45 to 50 minutes until the chicken is golden brown and the juices run clear when pierced with a knife. Then you serve the chicken with a generous amount of the onions and the lemon skins of rice and couscous, and just ladle with all those wonderful juices. Delicious. Guess what we're having for Shabbos? Okay, so let's go back to Emma and chat to her. How long did the whole process take? How many, did you have to leave home? You know, you sort of, I'm just talking about TV. You see people that leave home, they move into some lovely hotel, and then, or was yours over a long period of time so that you didn't have to leave your children and family for so long?
It was over about 3.5 months from start to finish, and there were a few occasions where we were packing overnight bags, and jetting off and going to different locations. I was really lucky because my husband had kind of mentioned to his work that, you know, his wife was in a sort of process of sorts, and he needed to have a little bit of flexibility in working from home. I'm fortunate enough that my in-laws live around the corner.
Oh, wonderful.
So we have good support there. Yeah. And I have, I do have a nanny as well to help. So we, between everyone really pitched in and, I was able to go and do it, because I think if I didn't have that extra, family support, yes, it would have been impossible to do that.
Right. Things, what's happened in your life since MasterChef? What has this sparked on?
Yeah, so I mean, you reach a pathway really at the end of MasterChef. Where,
yes.
And I guess many people who are in jobs or careers, you know, they have to make a decision. Do you want to go all guns blazing and that's it? You did give up what you did before and now you are a foodie and your life is in food and you choose which path you take. I had a slightly different position because I was fortunate enough to have my own business. And travel is not completely unconnected to food. So I was able to say, right, I want to go and do some foodie stuff. I want to, you know, I got an agent, and my agent was very enthusiastic about, you know, me doing a book. Yes. Particularly in the market in the UK, there hadn't been a kind of Jewish cookbook for a really long time.
Yes.
So I think the idea of that was exciting for the market. So, you know, that was a path I went down. And obviously you're in demand and people want you to cook for them and people want you to entertain them. And, you know, you get thrown all sorts of opportunities, which is amazing. But I was able to do that alongside keeping my job in travel.
Wow.
And working out a way of incorporating it into the travel business so that, you know, when clients were on holidays, I could say, right, these are the best places to go and eat. Let's do cuckoo glasses. And
okay.
So it took a couple of years to work out what to do in terms of, you know, and obviously you're split so many ways because, I mean, you know, the kids are still young.
Yes.
So they have their demands. The business was still going well. It had its demands. You know, there was just, I actually found it quite stressful. I have to be honest with you. And people always say, how do you cope? And I said, well, sometimes I don't. You know, sometimes I have a bad day and I want to give everything up. But,
yes.
I guess I think I feel quite lucky to have been able to kind of pursue both the travel and the food path quite well.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and we are talking to Emma Spitzer. As I said, she was a finalist in MasterChef competition in 2015. She's since written a book, and she's very kindly given me some recipes to share with you. It seems as though she loves chicken because the next recipe that we're going to share from her new book, Fress, is Ceylan chicken. So my husband's Israeli cousin, Michal, shared this recipe with me when I was in MasterChef. She is a very gifted cook with an effortless, down-to-earth style that's reflected in her hospitality. Having been fortunate enough to have sat as a guest at her table, I knew I could trust her. This is an adaptation of her recipe, and while it didn't make the MasterChef table for fear of its simplicity, we're still going to share it with you. Okay, so you will need 6 skin-on chicken legs, chicken leg joints, as she calls it, or 12 bone-in, skin-on chicken thighs, or a mixture of thighs and drumsticks. 12 shallots, peeled but left whole. Okay, for chicken purposes, we won't be able to leave them whole. 3 sweet potatoes, scrubbed and cut into wedges. 2 bay leaves. 5 sprigs of thyme. 12 dates, pitted. Sea salt and freshly ground black pepper. Rice or couscous to serve. 50 grams toasted flaked almonds to garnish. And this is what you're going to need for the sauce. 6 tablespoons of clear honey, 6 tablespoons of soy sauce, 3 tablespoons of balsamic vinegar, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and 2 centimeter piece of fresh root ginger peeled and grated. You will also need 3 garlic cloves, 2 cinnamon sticks, and 1 tablespoon of ground coriander. Also, 300 mils of red wine. Now, you're going to think, wow, that's a hell of a list, Sharon. I mean, you know what? Most of it, I think the only thing I had to go out and buy were the shallots and the dates because most of it you've got in your cupboard. So it's not that difficult to make. So you preheat the oven to 180 and you place the chicken skin side up on a baking tray. And you arrange the shallots and sweet potatoes. If you don't want to use shallots, you can use onions. And sweet potato wedges around the chicken. Then you mix all the ingredients for the sauce together and pour over the top, ensuring that everything is well covered. And you season it generously with salt and black pepper and then tuck in the bay leaves and the thyme sprigs. Okay, it was 5 sprigs of thyme. And then you cover the tray with foil and roast for about 30 minutes. And then you turn the oven up to 200 and remove the foil, add the dates, and give all the ingredients around the chicken a good stir in the sauce. Then cook uncovered for a further 30 minutes until the chicken is nicely golden and everything has slightly caramelized. Then you serve the chicken over a bowl of rice or couscous with lots of the sauce, and then you scatter it with the flaked almonds to garnish it. Now that sounds quite exciting, okay? For we've got two chicken dishes for Shabbos, and I'm now going to give you, well, you know what? Let's go back to Emma. I'm talking to my sound engineer, Craig, who I always forget to say thank you to, so I'm saying thank you to him now. And let's go back to Emma, and then I will share another one of her wonderful recipes. Okay, your new book. What is the Yiddish meaning for fresh? Just explain it to our listeners out there.
What is the essence of fresh?
Yes, and what does fresh mean in Yiddish, would you say?
Okay. Fresh for me was an introduction to the world of Jewish food, but Jewish food in a different spotlight. So taking the influences of my cultural background, my history, which is more on the Eastern European side, and my husband, whose family, his mother's Israeli, so he has the Sephardi side. So for me, fresh is about family recipes, it's heritage food, but it has a really modern flair. So Ottolenghi, as I said, I mentioned earlier, was a huge influence for me. But actually, because Ottolenghi is a trained chef, a lot of his dishes are fairly complicated. So, but quite a long process in putting together each of the dishes. Whereas I wanted to show people that, you know, there's a real simplicity but excitement about my food. You know, you don't have to be a trained chef. You don't even have to be very confident in the kitchen. I wanted to put together recipes which were very easy but really tasty, and showed off, I guess, you know, all the influences that have been in my life.
Yes.
So, you know, and I'm really, really proud of it. 110 recipes in total. Uh-huh. You know, I actually got figures through from my publishers the other day, and fresh has been in one section of the kind of the world food, has been one of the best selling cookbooks in the Jewish market.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I think it's because yeah, thank you. Thank you. But it's modern and it's simple.
Yes.
And unfussy and uncomplicated, which is how I cook.
And that's the way to do it. Easy, simple, quick and easy. And you mentioned as well, I was reading up on you, that you actually host supper clubs in your home for about 20 people. And aren't you nervous of strangers? I'd be petrified. You screen them.
I do it less now. I'm lucky to have a fairly generous open plan kitchen space, like a dining room space. And I thought it would be really nice to have an intimate setting where people can share, you know, a communal setting. I can seat around 25 people fairly comfortably. And they can see me cooking because it's all open plan, but they get kind of, you know, it's all sharing plates. I don't really do, you know, individual style plates.
Right.
But, you know, and I was starting to do it once a month, and they sold out pretty quickly, so then I was like, okay, I'll do two consecutive nights because I'm going to do all this work, then I may as well do enough for 50 guests.
Right.
And then it got to the point when actually, you know, the kids would be cocked them upstairs, and it would get quite loud, and I just thought, actually, you know, it's too much for me on top of everything else. So I parked the supper clubs a little bit. I just sort of said, right, I'll take a breather from them. I've done a bit more brand consultancy recently, so working on recipe development for the brand.
Yes.
My brand.
Tell us the brands.
That's really exciting.
What brands are they?
Sorry?
What brands are they? Let's give them a shout out.
Yeah, well, one of them is Stobe, and Dwilling. So it's the French cookware company Stobe, which is, incredible cast iron cookware.
Yes, I know it.
Used by most of the, amazing stuff. It's used by most professional chefs. So,
yeah, beautiful.
They are trying to increase their awareness in the UK. Their products are amazing. So they took me on as a brand partner, gosh, just over 2 years ago.
Wonderful.
So I did some work with them. And I've done some work with Battler, which is the brand that makes pestos and They're quite famous for sun-dried tomatoes and that sort of thing. So,
right.
You know, and I'm always trying to see if there's a new emerging company that are looking to launch. Then obviously, you know, being an influencer, when you have a presence on social media and you have a good following, you become an influencer.
Right, absolutely.
And then you can help kickstart brands, you know, by doing some work with them and trying their products. So I've kind of gone off into all different avenues, really.
Yes.
Quite diverse.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, and we have been chatting to Emma Spitzer and having a lot of fun learning about MasterChefs and her new book, and she shared some lovely recipes with me. I said earlier on that seems like a real chicken day, and I think this last recipe is going to have to, or second to last recipe, is another chicken one, but this is especially for my friend Karen, who loves meatballs. It's called Chicken and Pistachio Meatballs with Coriander Tahina. So it serves about 6, it says here, and it makes 25 meatballs. These chicken meatballs really pack a flavor punch. Quick, simple to prepare, and healthy. They need nothing more than some plain rice or a fresh salad to accompany them, making for an easy lunch or dinner. Okay, so if there's one thing I have to tell you with this recipe, you've got to use fresh coriander and fresh leaf parsley. The rest of the things you can use dry, that's fine, but the freshness of the coriander and the parsley. And if you don't eat coriander, then just double up on the parsley. Okay, so you will need half an onion, 100 grams of unsalted pistachio nuts, 50 grams of medium matzo meal, a handful of tarragon leaves. Now, we use only dry tarragon, so you'll need about a tablespoon of dried tarragon leaves, 2 handfuls of coriander leaves and the stalks, 2 handfuls of flat leaf parsley and the stalks. That's about 35 grams each. A tablespoon of fresh lime juice, 2 teaspoons of ground cumin, 2 teaspoons ground coriander, 1 teaspoon chili flakes, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper, 500 grams, that's 1/2 kilo of minced chicken or beef. I made it with beef and it was beautiful. 1 egg beaten, 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Now for the coriander tahina dressing, you will need 2 large handfuls of coriander leaves. Oops, sorry guys. This is for coriander lovers, I can see. I forgot about the coriander in the tahina. 2 large handfuls of coriander leaves, 1 garlic clove crushed, 75 grams of tahina, juice of 1 lemon, and a pinch of salt. And then what you do is, you can also add a handful of mint leaves on top, finely chopped just for decorations, which is very tasty and fresh. Add all the meatball ingredients, except the chicken or beef, egg and oil, to a processor and pulse until the mixture comes together. You want a coarse, grainy consistency for this. So you transfer to a large bowl, and then you add the chicken and the egg. And because if you add the chicken, it's going to turn into an absolute smooth paste, and you don't want that. You just want a nice coarse minced chicken. So you add the chicken and the egg and work the mixture together with your hands just until it's lightly combined, and you don't want to overwork it. You cover it and then place it in the fridge for 30 minutes. Meanwhile, clean out the food processor, then add all the ingredients for the coriander tahina to it and blend it. And with the motor running slowly, add some water until you have a loose dressing with the consistency of, she says, double cream. Transfer to a bowl, cover, and refrigerate until needed. Preheat the oven to 220. You wet your hands and you roll the chicken or beef mixture into ping pong ball sized balls. You grease a baking sheet ish large enough to hold the meatballs in a single layer with 1 tablespoon of the olive oil. You brush the remaining tablespoons of oil over the top of the meatballs and you bake it for about 15 minutes. Serve the meatballs. Now, if it's beef, I would do it for about 20 minutes. Then you serve the meatballs on a bed of steamed rice, garnished with the pomegranate seeds and chopped mint. And then you drizzle the coriander tahina liberally over the top. Does that not sound delicious? Go and get your mincemeat or your minced chicken and make those balls. Okay, let's go back to Emma and let's hear what she has to say. Let's try to come into your kitchen. And I open the fridge.
Yeah.
What is the first thing that I'm going to see in your fridge? What is something that you, okay, rather, what is something that you always have in your fridge?
Always have in my fridge yogurt. Yogurt is my staple, a big old tub of full fat yogurt. And that's because I always make labneh.
Yes.
I always accompany a lot of my dishes with a side of either a garlic yogurt or, you know, I'll make it, use it to make flatbreads. That's become my main thing. Just a simple yogurt flatbread. Kids really love that, especially with a bit of barbecue. I have yogurt pretty much every day for breakfast. So yogurt is a sort of the most versatile ingredient that I will have tubs of. In fact, I've got about 3 or 4 different types in my fridge at the moment of yogurt. So that's probably the first thing you see. Yogurt and eggs. Yogurt and eggs always in the fridge. Everything starts with an egg.
So what's for supper tonight? What are you going to make for supper tonight?
What's for supper? Well,
not yogurt.
You picked a good night to ask me that. I've got family coming.
Good,
so
yes.
I have chicken in my fridge and I'm going to make that with a date, sticky date and harissa marinade.
Oh, lovely. That sounds delicious.
And I'm doing a fricka salad with some barberries and some caramelized shallots and some dill and a mustard dressing. This is not typical. I have to say that I don't cook like this all the time, but when I have people coming over, you can imagine that the expectations are high.
So
I find myself having to always raise the bar.
Yes.
And in this weather, it's got to be a big old salad. Just a really nice chopped tomato, cucumber, red pepper, olives, you know, just a big salad. So simple food, nothing too fancy, but, you know, big bowls of food everyone can tuck in.
Sounds amazing. Sounds like I'd like to come for supper if I was in the same country.
Well, I was going to say, if you catch a flight now, you never know.
Tell me if, what's happening now? Where to from here with you? Emma Sprinter. Come on, you can't slack it now. We've got to keep that pace up, Emma.
What's happening now, did you say?
Yes, are you going to write another book? Are you going to have your own TV show? What have we got to look forward to?
You know what? Yeah, the dream for me would be to have a TV show. I would love it because I'm really, really passionate about showing people how simple you have to think it can be to cook. And I know that everybody wants to go down that route of, you know, this is so easy, one pot dishes, one flavor, big pot, you know. But actually, I do think it's always inspiring for people to watch other people who are not trained chefs, who have literally taken a passion and kind of taught themselves to go with it. So that's something that, you know, that would be the ultimate dream, obviously. But, you know, another book, I have been in touch with, you know, with publishers about perhaps another book on the cards at some point.
Yes.
You know, the honest answer is I don't know. I love the diversity still of what I do and the fact that different opportunities arise at different occasions. And, you know, that I always get asked, you know, would I like to open a restaurant? And the reality is that a restaurant, I think, would kill my love of food because it becomes a business and it becomes a hard business. You know, restaurants close before they open here. And the challenge is obviously trying to be different and, you know, in a good location. So I'm not ready for a restaurant right now. I think I have too much on.
No, I was just saying, and catering, have you, you know, do you do anything, any kind of big catering things, like barmies, weddings or anything like that?
No, I'm not good with doing massive numbers because, that again, that would kill my love for it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Parties, you know, and sort of smaller numbers, and I like doing those kind of big bowl dishes that I can put on a buffet table for people, but definitely not into big catering.
Yeah, that was not the route
I wanted to go down.
It's fun when you do it with your family and your friends. I love cooking for family and friends, but ask me to cater. Not in my, it's different, doesn't it?
No, and also you have to have the means to be able to, you know, to store the food to kind of once you cook it because so much of the prep is done in advance. You know, I don't have the capacity here in a little domestic kitchen, you know, with four kids to be able to find space to do it. So I did start with, you know, with doing some catering, and then I quickly realized it was just not going to work. So I don't do it.
Yeah. It's very difficult. I take my hat off to caterers, I want to tell you. If I have to cook for over 30, I start to panic a little. But anyway, it's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And
thank you.
I'm going to be sharing some recipes with everybody and chatting and sharing recipes.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the SN Fresen Show. I just have to share one more recipe from Emma Spitzer, which was unbelievable, and it's called vanilla chocolate cheesecake. So you would need 200 grams of Petit Bourg biscuits, or I use Nutty Crusts because I just love Nutty Crusts, but you can use whatever biscuit base you like. You'd need 120 grams of unsalted butter. I must say, didn't see unsalted, and I just used regular butter, and it was so delicious. 150 grams of white chocolate broken into pieces, 200 grams of unsalted butter softened. I don't know how we're going to get it soft in this weather, but anyway, 125 grams of caster sugar, one large egg, one large egg yolk, 250 grams of really good quality cream cheese. Something like she recommends Philadelphia. 200 grams of full fat creme fraiche. Okay. And then all you do is to prepare the biscuit base, add the biscuits to a food processor and blitz them to crumbs, and then mix it with the melted butter. You press 2/3 of the mixture into a baking dish, flattening it out. Now I'm going to talk quite quickly because we have to wrap up now. And place that in the freezer until it sets for about 15 minutes. Meanwhile, prepare the filling. Put the chocolate in a glass bowl and either set it over a saucepan of simmering water and ensure that the base of the bowl doesn't touch the water, or heat it in the microwave at 30-second bursts until it's melted. Just don't let it burn. Remove the bowl from the pan and leave to cool slightly. While the chocolate is melting and cooling, beat the softened butter, sugar, whole egg, egg yolk together in a mixer, and until it's fluffy. Okay, I'm wrapping up quickly now, and then this should take about 10 minutes, and you beat the cream cheese and the cream fraiche together in a bowl, and then stir in the melted chocolate, add the butter and the sugar mixture, and then carefully fold in all the ingredients together and spread the mixture over the biscuits and leave to set in your fridge for a minimum of 3 hours. She said, wait 24. It's worth waiting 24 for. Believe me, it's delicious. Thank you for joining me. It's been wonderful being on the show this morning. And remember, it's the eat and meet that makes the show complete.